Hello, everybody. How are you doing? Welcome back to the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast. I am your host, writer-director Christopher R. Mim, and as I said last time, I have a question for you. Are you there? Are you listening? If you are, send me an email at chris@sainteuphoria.com and let me know you are. I've gotten some from some of you from last month, and I really appreciate it. I have yet to determine what your special gift will be for letting me know you listen, but it'll be something cool, eventually. Right now, I haven't determined what that is, but you'll get something. This is the September edition of the Audiocast. This is our 11th episode, which means that I have been doing this for almost a year. I came up with the idea to do this while we were making Danny Johnson Saves the World, and that's been out for several months now. How's it going, everybody? I hope you're having a fantastic end of the summer as we march towards school being back in session and the fall starts to come around, which means pumpkin spiced everything and Halloween, which I know a lot of you out there really dig Halloween quite a bit. To be honest, when I was a kid, it was never my favorite holiday. My favorite holiday was always Christmas. Why? Because I got stuff and I like stuff. Over the years, I've received photos of folks who have dressed up as Mimiverse characters, or their kids dress up as the monsters, or what have you. If you or your friends or your children or your friends' children or your grandchildren or whatever dress up this year as monsters or characters from the films of the Mimiverse, please send me photos at chris@sainteuphoria.com. So here I am, as per usual, recording this audio cast pretty much right when I need it, as opposed to doing it in advance. And that's okay, because it allows me to really catch you guys up on what's going on in the Mimiverse. In the last month, a few cool things have happened. For instance, I have finished my first draft of the Monster Phantom Lake, the stage musical. If you've been following anything, the Mimiverse Monthly, or even the Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast, or just keeping up on the old Facebooks or the interwebs of some kind, you would know that we have been working on a stage musical version of the Monster Phantom Lake, along with Adam Bowl, who is doing all the music, and Mike Cook, who's going to help workshop the final product. My role has always been to adapt the script. Well, my part is done as far as I can get it. At this point, Adam just needs to finish up some of the music, and then we need to start moving forward on figuring out what works and what doesn't. So that's where that's at. Now, also pay attention, because soon we will be opening up several crowdfunding campaigns for the play next year. Right now, we have it scheduled for July of 2016 to unveil it. Let's hope we stick to that. We have to kind of get our crowdfunding butts in order to make this a reality. If you're a person out there who has experience with crowdfunding sites like Indiegogo and Kickstarter, please contact us, because everything I've done as far as crowdfunding up to this point has always been just on my own through sainteuphoria.com, with people sort of prepaying for the DVD and the premiere. And I've never done a true, honest-to-God crowdfunding campaign. So if you would like to help, I'm sure there are things that we can offer you for your help, especially if you have experience. Or even if you're just excited and want to help, this would be a great way to help. Drop us a line, please. chris@sainteuphoria.com. In other news, I am busy working on some very cool stuff. Stuff that I don't even know if I can tell you about yet. Just because I don't know what will be finished, what won't, what may end up on the Mimiverse scrap heap. Who knows? I'm keeping myself busy. One of the things that I'm keeping myself busy doing, obviously, is promoting the films quite a bit. I've been out and about a lot over the last 6 months. Well, and since the release of Danny Johnson, just out promoting the films and hitting conventions and events. And I hope that maybe one or two of you listening I have met in the recent past, you came up to my table at a convention, perhaps, and picked something up and liked it enough to check this out. Hi, thank you. Recently, I was in Kansas City for Crypticon Kansas City, which is... Crypticon is a convention that started actually in Minneapolis, my hometown, and still happens every year around October in Minneapolis, but it has since expanded into a Crypticon Kansas City and Crypticon Seattle. Now, I'd done Crypticon Minneapolis several times just simply because it was local and it's a great horror con. And last year, I was invited to be a guest at Crypticon Seattle, which was very cool. If there's anybody out there listening right now to this who I met there, I had a great time there. It was really nice to meet you. Kansas City, however, was the one event I had not done up until this point. So because I wanted to do every single Crypticon, because I've done well at Crypticon and it's a very well-run event, I decided to do the Kansas City one. And I'm really glad I did because we met a lot of cool people. We sold a lot of movies to people who'd never seen them before. But also ran into a couple folks we know and have met and talked to over the years, including Tony Todd. Tony Todd being the guy who played Candyman in that series of films. But also, he is well known as playing Kern, the brother of Worf on Star Trek, which is how I know him best. So, funny story, Crypticon 2007. Which in retrospect turned out to be a very important year. It was actually the first Crypticon I'd ever attended. We had a table selling movies, and it was Josh Craig, Mike Mason, and myself. Josh Craig, of course, played Professor Jackson. Mike Mason played Lobo and Dr. Frazier in It Came From Another World. And myself, we were there. We had two movies at the time, Monster Family and It Came From Another World, and we were working on Cavewomen on Mars. And two or three tables down from where we were was Tony Todd. And across from us was Lloyd Kaufman of Troma Films. And to the right of us, I believe we had like several of the starlets from Halloween H2O. During that event, I met Tony Todd, and he's a really cool guy and very unpretentious. And I gave him a couple copies of my first two films, and he, you know, thanked me profusely. I figured he gets a lot of stuff all the time, so I'm sure he just packs it away or gives it away or sells it or tosses it. I don't know. I just thought it'd be kind of cool to give it to him. So I did. The other important thing about this event that should be noted before I finish this particular story is that that was also the year that I met Mitch Gonzalez. Mitch Gonzalez is a very important person in the Mimiverse and has been for years. And that was the event that we met him. He came up to our booth. I wasn't even there. He came up to our booth and he talked to Mike Mason. I'm pretty sure he talked to Josh, and he mentioned, you know, that he had did mask work and latex stuff and asked if we ever needed help. And then he sent me some stuff and some pictures of his work, and I was so impressed. And finally, several movies later, he finally got into Destination Outer Space, and the rest is history. And now, of course, he's designed some of the most iconic monsters of the Mimiverse. Anyway, so flash forward to Crypticon Kansas City 2015, and Tony Todd is a guest at this event. And this is just shows how cool Tony Todd really is. At the end of it, and people are sort of packing up and stuff, he makes a point to walk around and check out all the vendors' tables and say hi and ask how we did. Not a lot of guests, especially bigger name guests, do that. And it's really cool that he would. And he was very personable. And he comes up to my table and he looks down at my movies and says, "Hey, I have a couple of these." He remembered. And I was super excited. I said, "Yeah, I met you at Crypticon Minneapolis 2007, and I gave you a couple copies of my films." He's like, "Wow, you looks like you've been busy." And I was like, "Yeah, I've got eight more movies since." He's like, "Fantastic, man. Keep doing it. Keep making movies. That's great." And then he pulls the giant spider out, throws it on my table, pulls out $10, and he's like, "I want this one. This one looks good." So he bought a copy, which I thought was really nice of him. And that was sort of one of the cooler stories of that weekend. Otherwise, it was just a very good show. Lots of great people, enthusiastic folks who, you know, they got it. I didn't feel like I really had to do any real hard selling at this event. I highly recommend if you're near the Kansas City area, check out Crypticon Kansas City next year. It's a great show if you're inclined to check out horror conventions. So yeah, I've just been keeping busy. The Mimiverse is not dead and will not die. One of the things I am doing, which is kind of fun, is I started a curling team. And I'm sure you're listening to this going, "Yeah, we know." Or you're going, "What the hell? Why a curling team? What? Every year I usually do a stupid April Fool's joke on SaintEuphoria.com, and one year, because I was very much into the sport of curling because of the Olympics, I made a joke that I was giving up making films to pursue Olympic gold in the fine sport of curling. Well, I actually tried it, and I really liked it. Turns out there are several curling clubs in Minnesota, which should not be a surprise to anyone. And there's one not that far from my house that actually turns out is the official Olympic training facility. It's one of the few curling centers in the U.S. that is open year-round. I know that seems strange that they would close an ice rink like that, but it can be really expensive to keep ice in the summer, even in Minnesota, because it does get hot here, believe it or not. It gets hot, it gets sticky, it gets uncomfortable. Sometimes, honestly, you think of Minnesota as this cold, barren wasteland, and it is. But in the summer, it actually gets quite tropical here. There's a lot of standing water, and you get sort of the stagnant, hot, sticky air. Sometimes it's more tropical here than it is in Florida. No kidding. And of course, the news loves to talk about that when that happens. Anyway, so I tried curling and I really liked it. And one of the instructors for one of the Learn to Curl events I was at mentioned that they had a novice league. And I thought, you know what the hell? I want to start a team. I want to actually play in a league, see what it's like to play games against people. And one thing led to another, and then suddenly I have a team. And it's called the Rock Monsters in honor of the fact that I make monster movies. And plus, all of the members of the team are Mimiverse mainstays, including Stephanie Mim, a name you should recognize, Michael Kaiser, who has played most of the monsters in the films, and Mark Hader, who's probably best known from the movies as General Castle, but also behind the scenes, he is one of the hosts of the Mimiverse Bonfire podcast. We started this curling team called the Rock Monsters. And now, my friends, of course, I'm going to try and sell you on something. But it's also, it's something kind of cool that has to do with curling, but also the movies of the Mimiverse. We're not great, to be honest. We've played a total of 7 games, and before that I'd curled 3 times, so I've been on the ice 10 times. Maybe 11 or 12 if you add in a couple practices. And I came up with a cool t-shirt design that is basically the monster family breaking through a curling sheet through the house being the little circles you throw the stones into. And we talked about the idea of getting team boosters. It really comes down to, would you like one of these shirts, the Rock Monster shirts? We're selling the shirts. And if you buy one now before they are printed, they will be printed in time for the fall season. The fall season starts toward the end of this month of September. If you would like one of the shirts, you can become a booster. We're going to put on the back the official logo of the films of Christopher R. Mim, the Saint Euphoria Pictures All for George Productions handprint logo, which is the Monster Phantom Lake handprint from that tree. We'll also be listed the names of the people who are the boosters. We have quite a few right now, but if you'd still like to get in on this, you can. To do that, you need to go to Saint Euphoria, all spelled out, SaintEuphoria.com/curling, curling.html, and become a team booster. And again, really what you're doing is pre-ordering a shirt. And by pre-ordering that shirt, you get your last name on the back. How cool is that, right? Basically, all the money that comes into Saint Euphoria goes right back out in the form of promotion of the films. It goes right back out as getting new DVDs when we run out, or making more stuff, or, you know, for instance, another thing we have available right now is we've been doing lobby cards. And if you don't know what lobby cards are, they're like mini posters from back in the day that the studios used to send out to theaters. And because they don't make them anymore, and they're pretty freaking cool, they're highly sought after by collectors if you could find something for a big movie like, say, Creature from the Black Lagoon. Anyway, so we started doing lobby cards, Mimiverse ones, in very, very limited quantities. We've done now 6 of the 10 films, and the lobby card sets for the first 5 films, which include Giant Spider, Danny Johnson, Late Night Double Feature, Monster Phantom Lake, and Attack of the Moon Zombies. Those have all sold out. They're gone. Those collectibles, they're gone. You really can't get them anymore. Maybe we'll reprint them later. I don't know. But we just released Terror from Beneath the Earth ones. And we're already down to like two sets or something. So maybe if you're interested in ordering those, you get on that by going to SaintEuphoria.com. It's under the lobby card section of the merchandise page. So the money that comes in, including the money that goes toward this curling team t-shirt, that goes toward producing cool stuff like that. Printing isn't free, sadly. And so you have to invest in these things. And honestly, Saint Euphoria is a company that probably should just be a nonprofit based on the fact that it doesn't make one. I am the owner of Saint Euphoria LLC, and I will be honest with you folks. I don't really make any money, but I don't lose it either. And this is what I like about it, is that I know the folks out there like yourself who are listening, you like the movies, you like the Mimiverse, you love this universe that I'm creating. Enough that you're listening to a podcast about it, where I yammer on for usually about 20 to 30 minutes about all the great things I'm doing. And yes, I realize how egomaniacal it seems, but I want to use this as a way to talk to you folks and sort of get in touch with you and let you know what's going through my head and what I'm thinking. But also, I've been trying to make a point to use this to thank you guys for listening and for participating and for buying the movies and going out to screenings and coming to say hi at conventions, because this is not a living for me, but it is what I want to do. It is what I enjoy doing, and I enjoy entertaining you guys. I enjoy making people happy and maybe sometimes scaring them or making them laugh or whatever. It's one of the joys of my life. It really is. I don't know why this got heavy all of a sudden, but it just is. And I appreciate every one of you who has contributed to make this a possibility. I work for a living too. It's sometimes hard to part with your hard-earned money when you have bills to pay, kids to feed, family members to take care of. I understand very well that in this day and age, money can be tight. So for someone like you to throw money at me and my fun, goofy little movies, it means a lot to me because I understand how hard it can be. I've come to the realization over the last 10 years that I understand that I will probably never be a household name success in what I do. And you know what? That's okay. If that's how it ends up, it's okay, because I'm really happy with the level of success I've been able to achieve. I got the key to a city. That's pretty cool. And that's enough. I don't want to be selfish. I'm not selfish about this. I'm having fun and I'm enjoying it. And I'm sure there's one or two of you out there who may be listening to this that are probably rolling their eyes being like, oh yeah, sure. You're not selfish. Well, I am a little bit. Everyone is. I mean, heck, my last name is the name of it, the Mimiverse. How egotistical is that? In fact, I had someone once, I don't remember who it was, they were just talking to me and they're like, you know, what I sound kind of funny is the idea that you have a universe named after you. And I said, yeah, it's pretty... It's pretty egotistical, isn't it? At least I didn't coin the term. For the record, the term was coined by Mitch Obrecht, king of the superfans. I hope you're listening, Mitch. Hi, Mitch. Yeah, I don't know what happened to this podcast, but I ended up on yet another tangent, and perhaps that's why you listen. Maybe it's a drinking game of how long can it take before Chris finds a way back to what the heck it was he was talking about before. Honestly, I don't know. I was talking about curling and how you should buy one of these cool shirts and become a booster to get your name on the back. And then you should maybe think of picking up one of those last two Terror from Beneath the Earth lobby card sets, perhaps. And then, of course, I went off on another tangent yet again of talking about how grateful I am that you folks are so awesome. And you are. Okay, here is how the rest of the show is going to go. First, I'm going to read a couple of Amazon reviews of my films. And of course, it's always The Giant Spider, because The Giant Spider is the one movie, as I've been telling everybody I meet, I don't ever have to sell The Giant Spider. If they like The Giant Spider, that's when they branch out. Perhaps that's the one they sort of, it's the gateway. It's the gateway drug of the Mimiverse. The Giant Spider. I'm going to read you a couple short Amazon reviews. Then I'm going to throw it off to Derek Cook, host of one of the best podcasts around, dealing with the subject of classic monster movies, the classics that I try so desperately to emulate. It's worth checking out, monsterkidradio.net. You should be listening, because it's very well produced and it's very entertaining. And actually, several Mimiverse folks have been guests on his show, most notably Mitch Gonzalez. Hey, there's Mitch again. Derek has been really cool in occasionally throwing us some cool stuff to throw into this podcast. And it's been a little while since Derek had enough free time to give us a cool thing to throw into an episode. And this month, he did. So thank you very much, Derek. After that, we'll be reading the seventh chapter of the Canoe Cops versus the Mummy, and then closing it out, as we often do, with another good bad joke from our friend, Dr. Bob Tesla of Midnight Monster Movies with Dr. Bob, a cool monthly free screening series that is held in Columbus, Ohio. You should check it out. I mean, it's free. If you're in the area, it's free. I don't understand why you wouldn't go. Last year, Midnight Monster Movies with Dr. Bob did the first ever true Mimathon, basically a marathon of all the Mimiverse films. Well, next year in April 16th to be exact, in Columbus, Ohio, we will be holding the second ever Mimathon. This will be a 24-hour marathon of Mimiverse films and other cool stuff like Justin Overlander's The Bequeather, which is, of course, Justin played several characters in several Mimiverse films, and he made a movie called The Bequeather a couple years ago that was inspired by the Mimiverse. Few people have ever seen it outside of the people who went to the premiere when it was held here, and it's shown around at a couple of events around the country, but this is one of those rare instances where you get to see it. Plus, we'll be having a bunch of other exclusive content added, and if you can make it through the night, you may just get some cool exclusive stuff. As of right now, you know, there's no premiere next year. So this is kind of as close as it gets. And I'll be there. Several of us are going to be there. It's going to be really fun. So if you're a big fan, this might be worth a trip. It's on a Saturday. So it'd be over a weekend. So you could come down, come to the Mimathon, hang out, try and make it through the night, and then, you know, hang out. It should be good. So we'll have more information about that as time goes on. But April 16th, 2016, starting, I believe, at noon and running till noon on Sunday. Mimathon 2, as Dr. Bob called it, the more the mimier. I didn't come up with that. I promise. That was all Dr. Bob. I think it's awesome. I think Nurse Feratu, who is Dr. Bob's assistant, was not quite so happy with the pun, or the whatever it is. I think it's awesome. I guess I should mention one other thing. This is becoming a bit of a longer episode, isn't it? Don't forget that one other event we're doing next year is the Monster of Phantom Lake Special Edition in 3D. We'll be doing a cool DVD release party viewing of the Monster of Phantom Lake in 3D, which I'm in the process of converting. We'll be doing an event March 9th, 2016, which is the official 10th anniversary of the release of The Monster of Phantom Lake. We'll be doing a screening of that at the Heights Theater. But in addition, you can actually become a contributor to that. And you can get your name added to the end credits of the 3D special edition. You'll also get a free copy of the DVD when it's complete. And you'll get a ticket to the DVD release party. So again, though we're not doing a premiere next year, like we normally would, we have some really cool events that should serve as stand-ins for it. And all you have to do is go to sainteuphoria.com/contributor.html or simply go to SaintEuphoria.com and pull down the merchandise drop-down menu. And from there, you can do things like contribute to the 3D re-release of the Monster Phantom Lake and become a curling booster or pick up your Terra from Beneath the Earth lobby cards or whatever. Finally, it is time to quickly read a couple of Giant Spider Amazon reviews. I got three. Okay. First off, 5 stars. Excellent. I think I may have read this one last month, but I'm still proud of it. The guy liked it. He said it was excellent, gave it 5 stars. Then, of course, there's another one that was 1 star. Didn't like it at all. I hated this movie and only bought it because of the reviews. Okay, well, sorry you hated it. And then the last, most recent one was, it's a little weird, the title of it, they gave it 3 stars, and the title of the review is Movie. 3 stars. And the entirety of the review reads as such, okay, movie. Well, it's straightforward and to the point. Can't argue with that. Okay. That's it for Amazon reviews. Let's throw it over to Derek Cook, and when we come back, Chapter 7, Canoe Cops versus the Mummy.
When I'm not checking out the latest updates at SaintEuphoria.com or watching one of the movies directed by Christopher R. Mim, I'm producing my own show, Monster Kid Radio, where we celebrate the classics and sometimes not-so-classic genre cinema of yesteryear. I'm Derek M. Cook, and I love classic monster movies, and that's why I love the movies of Christopher R. Mim. He draws his inspiration from a lot of these classic monster movies, these classic horror and sci-fi films from the 50s, and I can't help but notice possible inspirations from some of these classic movies, like 1966's Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD. I'm serious. Hear me out. Now, Mim's movies typically have the 1950s aesthetic, but he, like a lot of us, love all different eras of genre film. We love movies from the 80s, the 90s, modern films, films that predate the 50s. We love a lot of movies. And while I don't know if Christopher has seen Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD, I did notice something about this movie that reminded me of his most recent film, Danny Johnson Saves the World.
From outer space they came with a dastardly plan to steal the minds of the youth. Stands in their way in Danny Johnson Saves the World. See our hero battle strange invaders in their rampaging metal monstrosity. Danny! See prehistoric creatures come to life on the silver screen. See bizarre, terrifying monsters in
Invasion Earth 2150 AD is fresh in my mind because we just talked about that over on Monster Kid Radio, episodes 231 and 232. Depending on when this episode of this podcast goes out, you may have already heard that, or you can go and check it out in the archives, whatever. Bottom line is, I've got this particular Doctor Who film on the brain.
This is Invasion Earth 2150 AD. This is Invasion Earth 2150 AD. Planet Earth has been bombarded by meteorites, subjected to cosmic rays, savagely invaded by men of steel who have no flesh to pierce, no blood to spill. This is 2150 AD, the year when human beings are turned into living dead men, robo-men, the underground slaves of the world's new dictators. 2150 AD, a year that will thrill you and terrify you.
Look!
A year of rebellion as a brave handful hold out in a last-ditch battle for human survival.
Attention! Resist! And you will be exterminated!
Leading the resistance fighters is Peter Cushing, his most thrill-making role.
Come along!
Aided by Bernard Cribbins, a reluctant traveler into the dangerous future.
Have you seen the girl? Listen, where's the girl?
Ray Brooks, the boy with the knack. Who doesn't find life so easy in the year 2150 AD? Andrew Keir, Jill Kazin, Roberta Toby. All of them fighting to the death a mobilized band of burnt-out human beings, Robomen. With their flying saucers and an army of bloodless, fleshless metal monsters. This is Invasion Earth, 2150 AD. A shattering look into the future.
They're no good! The bombs are no good!
This is its own beast. It has nothing to do with the television series, whether the classic Who or the modern Who. It's its own alternate reality, maybe alternate dimension Doctor Who. Peter Cushing plays the Doctor, whose last name just happens to be Who. He's not an alien. He's just a human, a friendly, curious scientist who has a time traveled machine, the TARDIS, and goes on these various adventures. Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD is the second of the two films that Cushing made back in the 60s for the studio that would eventually become known as Amicus. Amicus is probably the second big dog when it comes to classic British genre cinema, Hammer Films being the big studio on campus. Now, Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD was based on the television series The Dalek Invasion of Earth from 1964, which was written by Terry Nation, who is a mainstay of classic 60s BBC genre cinema. He was responsible for the TV series Survivors, which is fantastic, by the way. And like I mentioned earlier, Peter Cushing is the lead in this film. And it's hard to find a Peter Cushing film that doesn't deliver in some way. I just want to spend as much time as possible with the man. And if he said, come into my TARDIS, let's go on an adventure, well, I'd do that. And you wouldn't even have to give me candy. And that sounded weird. Anyway, how does this movie make me think of Danny Johnson Saves the World? Well, Danny Johnson Saves the World, which if you haven't seen yet, you really need to. There's no excuse. It's available on DVD now. Go buy it. Go check it out. Buy some extra copies to give out as Christmas gifts. It's going to make an awesome Christmas present for somebody in the future because it does take place at Christmas time, or at least the wraparound bits do. And it's just an enjoyable movie. The story is about a bunch of kids, Danny Johnson in particular, trying to save the world from these aliens that have landed. The aliens in Danny Johnson Saves the World look nothing like the Daleks in Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD. However, they do have a bit of technology that made me think of this Doctor Who film. In the movie Danny Johnson Saves the World, they try to take over the children and brainwash them, make them their mental slaves. Well, in Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD, we have the Robomen, which is the result of the Daleks capturing humans, and if they pass the Daleks intelligence test, they get turned into these Robomen. They have this device put onto their head. Those of you who have seen Danny Johnson might start seeing some similarities here. I don't think I need to go much further than that. Did Chris see Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD? I don't know. I know Mimiverse monster maker Mitch Gonzalez is a fan of the Daleks. I had him on my own show and we talked about that a while back. So maybe he brought something to the table, or just maybe it came up a conversation, or it's just a happy accident, a coincidence, which really isn't all that far-fetched. Those of us who swim in classic genre cinema waters are going to have these familiar touchstones, whether we're conscious of them or not. Is Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD a good movie? Well, at the risk of sounding like I'm promoting my own podcast, you'll have to check out Monster Kid Radio episodes 231 and 232 to find out for yourself. Okay, I'm not going to make you wait. Yeah, I do recommend them. However, don't go into them thinking that they are your Doctor Who from television, because they're not. Completely different kind of doctor, completely different kind of lead character. But if you can let go of your television preconceptions, I think you'll still have a good time. And you know what? Even if you don't, pop in Danny Johnson Saves the World afterwards, because, well, that movie will put you in a good mood. No matter what. You can find me on my home podcast, Monster Kid Radio, at monsterkidradio.net. We release two episodes a week, every Tuesday and Thursday, and we talk about nothing but these types of movies. The movies that we love so much from this era, from the 30s through the 60s, with occasional toe dipping outside of that time period for some films that might throw back to this era, like the movies of Christopher R. Mem. This has been Monster Kid Movies with Monster Kid Radio's Derek M. Cook.
Thank you, Derek. All right. And now we're on to Chapter 7 of the Canoe Cops vs. the Mummy serial written by Stephen D. Sullivan. If you want to check him out, find him on Facebook or go to his website at stephendsullivan.com. Stephen with a PH. This is Chapter 7, Incident at the Diner, a.k.a. Grudge Match, Sunny Side Up. One of the things Stephen threw in here, and I want to read it because I think it's important, but it's a little dedication at the beginning. And it says, "For Aunt Hazel and Uncle Mac, reunited in that great green farm in the sky just after I wrote this chapter, we love you and we'll miss you always." Let's read the Canoe Cops versus the Mummy, Chapter 7, shall we? And it goes something like this. "I'm telling you, Gustav, old pal, this is starting out as a pretty weird day." "Weird in what way, Sven?" "Weird in the way that your canoe trip yesterday was weird." "Oh, do tell." "It's early in the morning, right? And I'm up with the birds like I usually am just before summer season. I take my morning constitutional and then decide to break my fast before settling into my shift out on the lake. So I stroll down to the center of downtown Phantom Lake trying to decide to whom I should give my custom when, all of a sudden, what do I spot? I give up what? Now, I can't be sure of this, Gustav, but I would swear I'm seeing a slender tan girl with golden jewelry wearing a very flimsy dress. The girl that vanished from my canoe yesterday after I rescued her? That's what I'm conjecturing myself, though from such a distance I can't be sure. Perhaps my old chum was not in the throes of sunstroke after all, I think, and I proceed to follow said alluring bit of pulchritude. But before I can catch up with her, she reaches the Bridgewater Diner and proceeds inside. This is a fortuitous coincidence, I think, for now I can, as the Greeks say, kill two birds with one stone, i.e. I can find out who this woman is for my friend Gustav, and I can also secure the morning repast for which my belly is yearning. Who is she? How did she vanish from my canoe so suddenly? I enter the Bridgewater, but much to my surprise, I don't see the girl. Indeed, the only patron seems to be in the diner is the little Egyptian, Mr. Hawass, whom you and I encountered at dinner last night. We saw him more than encountered him, Sven, but pray continue. Excuse me, miss, I say to the girl behind the counter. She bustles over and greets me warmly. How can I help you? I see by the tag on her blouse that her name is Hazel. The girl who came in just now, I say, craning my neck and continuing to look around. Where did she go? Hazel looks at me puzzled. No girl came in here, she replies. Perhaps she slipped in to use the restroom, I suggest. If anybody'd come in, I'd have heard it, says Hazel. She points to the bell attached to the front door, which I now recollect ringing as I entered. Nobody's come through in the last 10 minutes except you, Sven. Clearly, though we haven't been introduced previously, Hazel has heard me because of my prowess in law enforcement. Or perhaps she read the nameplate on your canoe cop's uniform. Perhaps. Either way, she continues, now do you want to order, or are you on some kind of snipe hunt? Perhaps both, I reply. That seems to confuse her, so I add, I'll have 2 eggs, crispy bacon, buttered English muffins, and coffee, black. What kind of eggs? Sunny side up, I say. Sure thing, she replies, jotting down my order on her pad. As she goes to fetch my coffee, she hollers to the cook, hey, Mac, fry 2, let the sun shine, burn 2 bacon, then burn the British with axle grease. How she manages this tongue twist around snapping her chewing gum, I don't know, but she does. Coming right up, Mac calls from the kitchen. Having failed in my quest to find your strange but alluring lady friend, I settle in for my morning repast. But, Sven, where did she go? Unless she concealed herself in Mr. Hawass's valise, I have no idea, Gustav. I can only conclude that what I saw must have been a trick of the sun. That's not the end of my tale, though. Oh, well then, please continue. I take a seat at the counter and Hazel brings my coffee. I must admit that it is a darn fine coffee. This will go well with a slice of cherry pie, I think. But then the tinkle of a small bell, which means someone has opened the door, fills the diner. I look over, in case this new customer turns out to be the girl I was following. Perhaps I only thought she entered, I think, when she actually went into the shop next door, and now she's come here for breakfast. But no such luck. Instead, a tall, suave-looking middle-aged gentleman appears. He's impeccably dressed and wears wire-rimmed glasses perched atop his hawk-like nose. As the door closes behind him, he exclaims, "Why, Ardoth, how good to see you." Mr. Hawass, sitting at a table in the corner, looks startled. He stands and the man crosses to him and shakes his hand vigorously. "Why, Director Zuko," Hawass says, "what are you doing here?" The Egyptian looks nervous, like a squirrel caught in a trap. "When I heard about your tragedy, I just had to drive down from the Twin Cities and see what I could do," the guy called Zuko replies. The way he carries on, I get the impression he's probably the little guy's employer. "That's possible, Sven. I seem to remember an article mentioning a Dr. Zuko as director of the Minneapolis Museum of Antiquities. If I recall the incident report from the Causeway accident, Dr. Hawass was traveling through Phantom Lake to get a position at that venerable institution." "Indeed. I recollect something like that as well. So, this Zuko guy's sudden appearance is like the boss dropping in for a surprise inspection. I can hardly blame Mr. Hawass for looking nervous." "My tragedy?" Hawass says, puzzled. "Your personal collection, of course," Zuko replies, sliding steadily into the booth and taking the seat across from the Egyptian. "How tragic to lose it when you were so close to your destination." "Oh, yes. Needless to say, the sentimental loss is incalculable," Hawass tells him. "But divers managed to salvage a few pieces." "Good, good," says Zuko, reaching across the table and clapping the smaller man on the shoulder. Hawass winces. "I'm just glad that the Princess Amunisis wasn't on that truck," Zuko continues. "Lucky thing that I had her shipped off to the museum ahead of time, isn't it?" Hawass goes red in the face. "Yes, lucky," he replies, though he doesn't look very happy about this bit of good fortune. "How soon will you be raising the rest?" Zuko asks. "I had not considered," Hawass replies. Zuko cuts him off. "Nonsense, nonsense, my boy. The museum will cover the costs, provided, of course, that you let us add the items to the museum's collection. Rahotep was one of Amunisis's guards. Don't you think it would be fitting that he be displayed in the museum near her? After all, he might be one of her paramours." "Amunisis had no paramours," Hawass snaps. "The princess died a virgin." "So you insist," Zuko replies with a chuckle, "but other scholarly accounts portray her as anything but sweet and innocent. Some even say that she was a schemer, a backbiter, and a wanton. They say she did not die of a fever, as you insist, but of poison dispensed by her political rivals, or perhaps by a jealous lover." "They lie," says Hawass, and now he looks like he might burst a blood vessel. "There is no proof of such scandalous accusations." He picks up that jackal-headed cane of his and shakes it at the bigger man. "I know I ought to turn away and mind my own business, Gustav, but the drama of the whole scene kind of sweeps me up." "Now, now," Zuko says, patting Hawass's shoulder patronizingly. "No need to get all worked up. I'm sure that once both mummies are installed at the museum, we'll have plenty of time to research and ferret out the truth of it." "Both mummies," Hawass muses. "Yes, Amunisis and Rahotep," Zuko elaborates. "Once the museum has rescued the princess's guard from his unfortunate watery grave, that mummy and the other pieces were to be mine alone," Hawass says hotly. "They are mine alone." "Why, yes," says Zuko. "Of course they are. For all the good they'll do you at the bottom of this godforsaken lake. Wouldn't it be better to let the museum raise them from the murky depths and share them with the rest of the world? We can even put up a plaque, generously donated to the museum by Dr. Ardoth Hawass. But those artifacts compose the entirety of my compensation for what you stole from me after the expedition," Hawass blurts. "The Princess Amunisis is also rightfully mine, as are numerous other pieces on display in your so-called museum." "Stole is such an emotional word," Zuko says flatly, "and not entirely accurate. As I have noted, if not for my intervention, the princess would lie at the bottom of Phantom Lake alongside her her guard. And need I remind you that here in America, possession is 9/10 of the law. Hawass is on his feet now, almost purple with rage, and shaking that stick of his as though he might hit Zuko with it. I would rather those artifacts rot at the bottom of the lake than let you take them too. Now, Ardoth, Zuko says, don't be hasty. He shakes his head and makes a tisking sound. I would never have hired you if I knew you had such a temper. And I never would have consented to be hired had I known that thievery was your common method of business. Zuko stands and gazes down at the smaller man. Think before you turn me down, Ardoth, he says. His eyes gleam like those of a muskie about to gobble up a minnow. Consider your options. That, my good sir, is exactly what I am doing. And with that, Hawass tosses a couple of bills on the table and covers his tab and storms out the door, slamming it shut behind him. Zuko turns and, with a smiling nod to Hazel, throws an extra bill under the table, though he hasn't eaten anything or even drank any coffee. Then he quietly exits. My, Hazel says, propping her hands on her slender hips. Such a lot of drama so early in the morning. It's almost like your afternoon soaps, Hazel, Mac adds from the kitchen. Takes all kinds, she says to me, doesn't it? Indubitably, I reply. She slides my breakfast down the counter to me. Eggs are up. I smile and dig in. Sure, I didn't catch the weird gal, but it's not often that you get both a good breakfast and a front row seat at a grudge match before 8 a.m.
And with that, we conclude Chapter 7 of The Canoe Cops versus the Mummy. Come back next month for Chapter 8 of this continuing saga. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you had a good time. I will wrap this up before we throw it off to Dr. Bob of Midnight Monster Movies with Dr. Bob, who will be hosting, don't forget, next April 16th, the Mimathon. Before I go, don't forget, as I always say, be good. But if you can't do that, be good at it. Thanks for listening.
It is I, Dr. Bob Tesla, with your Mimiverse Joke of the Month. A priest is at a funeral, and he walks up to the widow of the deceased. I'm so sorry to hear about Jim's death, Mary. My deepest sympathies to you. And the widow says, well, thank you, Father. It's been a very difficult time. The priest asks, did he have any last requests? And the widow thinks, yes, Father, he did. So the priest asks, what was his last request, Mary? The widow thinks about it. Well, he asked me to please put the gun down. Come on out, September 12th, to the Gateway Film Center for The Lost Skeleton Returns Again, only at Midnight Monster Movies with Dr. Bob.